Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
As the U.S. nears 400,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths, essential workers who can't work from home struggle to stay safe. Deborah Berkowitz is a former chief of staff and senior policy advisor for OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. She served in the Obama administration, and she's also the Worker Health and Safety Program Director for the National Employment Law Project. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So your career encompasses work with unions that represent frontline workers like grocery employees and meatpacking workers. As you look out over this blue-collar and white-collar landscape, what concerns you the most?
What keeps me up at night is that still, you know, 9 months after the beginning of the pandemic, that there are still no specific requirements that as a nation, every business that has employees has to implement to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. So among meatpacking, poultry workers, you see it in supermarkets, you'll see it in other retail stores, you're still seeing the spread of COVID-19 among workplaces.
Well, Debbie, to your point, last spring we heard a lot about viral outbreaks in workplaces like meatpacking plants, and the Trump administration actually intervened back then. Those employees became essential workers, and companies said they would actually institute precautions and restrictions. Did they actually do that on any scale, or did we take our eye off the ball?
Oh, this administration totally took its eye off the ball and completely failed to protect workers. The Secretary of Labor under President Trump, Eugene Scalia, decided there'd be no requirements and just let employers do what they want to do voluntarily. Some of the plants put in these flimsy plastic barriers between workers where there's like 500 workers in a big room working shoulder to shoulder that even the CDC said to them, does not protect workers unless you have social distancing 6 feet apart. And I think what you saw, which is really stunning, is you saw the administration come in to protect an industry so that they wouldn't have to protect workers. I mean, time and time again, CDC weakened its guidance when the meat industry asked them to, so they could keep making a profit, but it spread like wildfire.
Well, OSHA, the agency that's in charge of keeping workplaces safe and healthy, is turning 50 this spring. It doesn't sound like there'll be too much time for celebrating. What does the agency need to do right now to make workplaces safe from the spread?
That's a great question, because OSHA has been AWOL. I have to say, I helped run that agency for 6 years. And at the beginning of the pandemic, in the middle of March, when I got calls from meatpacking workers, healthcare workers, I said, just call OSHA. And OSHA actually told workers, there's nothing we can do. We're not inspecting. I mean, usually OSHA during the last 9 months would have done 10,000, maybe 20,000 inspections. They did a couple hundred.
Sounds like you're waiting for this new presidential administration for any changes to take place and therefore a new OSHA. But time is of the essence. What do workers need right now?
So workers really need to have employers follow the basic CDC guidance of, you know, social distancing, masks, notification when there are cases. And also they need to be able to speak up when they know that there are unsafe conditions and not be retaliated against. You know, the bottom line, I think what you find out in this pandemic and the public should realize is worker safety rights right now are really weak. And maybe this pandemic will cause us to rethink this ability of workers to protect themselves, which right now they really don't have.
When a vaccine arrives for essential workers, what other hurdles will they have to overcome?
Because you had a president that downplayed the virus, that downplayed the seriousness of the virus, that made up how you cure this virus, there's huge distrust now in the federal government and what they're advising. And so I do think that one of the first things that Biden-Harris team has to do is to launch a huge campaign to build the public's trust, but also to work with the states and to develop better mechanisms to deliver this vaccine to essential workers.
Former OSHA Chief of Staff and advocate with the National Employment Law Project, Deborah Berkowitz, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we reached out to OSHA for comment. The agency says it has issued nearly 300 COVID citations and kept hundreds of thousands of workers safe on the job.
Black brother of hell.
Missouri officials have said they expect to vaccinate all healthcare workers by the end of this month, followed by other essential workers. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission said last month employers can require their staff to get the COVID-19 vaccine. But questions remain about what happens if a worker refuses. St. Louis Public Radio's Shayla Farzon spoke with Washington University law professor Peggy Smith about what employers and workers can expect.
The EEOC has made it clear employers are going to be able to mandate the vaccinations, although there are some exceptions. And the first is with regard to employees with disabilities, and the second is going to apply to those employees who don't want to get the vaccination because of sincerely held religious beliefs, and that is going to be governed by the Civil Rights Act.
So let's say an employee goes to their boss and says, I'm not getting vaccinated, either because of a disability or a religious belief. What happens next?
So what the employer is going to have to be able to demonstrate is that any unvaccinated employee is someone who would in fact pose a direct threat because there is a significant risk to the health and safety either to that individual or to other individuals. The employer also has to be able to establish that that risk can't be eliminated or reduced by a reasonable accommodation. So it's not just, right, because you pose a risk to my workplace, even as you have a disability, you have to leave. You can't do that until you actually engage in the process of trying to provide a reasonable accommodation to the worker that has a disability.
What if we're talking about a company where it's not possible for the employer to make those accommodations, where the work has to be done in person, like a mechanic or a grocery store worker?
Even then, the employer should look to see if there are any other applicable state, federal, or local laws that might give that employee some additional rights. You could well imagine that even if an employer is not able to provide a reasonable accommodation to an employee who says that they don't want to take the vaccine because of a disability, maybe that employee would be, say, entitled to leave under the FMLA. Perhaps that employee is entitled to leave under some other employer policy. But assuming there is no other protection that is available, the employer can in fact terminate the employee.
I can imagine that employers are going to have to be really careful before they fire an employee for refusing to get vaccinated so they don't, you know, open themselves up to a lawsuit.
Without a doubt, the EEOC has indicated that when an employer is trying to make that judgment, some of those factors that the employer has to consider is, what's the duration of the risk that is being posed here? What's the nature and severity of the potential harm that might come about by allowing the unvaccinated employee to remain in the workplace? So without a doubt, employers are going to have to tread very carefully and ensure that they're covering all of their bases, dotting their I's and crossing their T's.
Taking a step back here, I mean, how likely do you think it is that we're going to see employers actually requiring staff to be vaccinated?
I think that actually very few employers will look to mandate the vaccination. employers are going to be really sensitive to the reality that right now, any number of employees are resistant to getting the vaccination. There is a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there about the vaccine, and I think employers are aware of that. They're going to be really concerned about causing a backlash. And so as a practical matter, I think that what you're going to see is that instead of mandating the vaccine, employers are going to be far more likely to strongly encourage workers to get vaccinated.
After last week's insurrection, the Capitol Police Force has already seen personnel shakeups in the wake of violence. Last week, Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund announced his resignation, and at least two officers have also been suspended for their roles in enabling the insurrectionists. And at least 10 other officers are under investigation. The personnel response from the Capitol Police has been swift. Yogananda Pittman was named acting chief of the force. Chief Pittman comes to the role after serving as an assistant chief and is the first Black person and first woman to hold the top position. While her appointment is a significant achievement, Pittman is also being tasked with overseeing the department at a time of crisis, one that has brought national scrutiny to the Capitol Police. And Pittman is not alone. Professionals of color are often promoted or elected to positions of power in times of crisis. We've seen a record number of people of color recently elected to Congress, as well as Kamala Harris being elected to vice president. And as private sector companies have been bullish on hiring people of color to lead diversity and inclusion initiatives. But there's a flip side to some of these victories. Are people of color in these times being set up for success? It's a phenomenon called the glass cliff, and we're going to talk about it today. Joining me now is Michelle Ryan, a professor of social and organizational psychology at the University of Exeter. She also coined the term glass cliff with her colleague. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Also joining us is Loretta J. Ross, visiting associate professor in the Program for the Study of Women and Gender at Smith College. Professor Ross, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Michelle, you started researching the concept of the glass cliff in part because of a 2003 article in the Times of London about women in leadership. Tell us what that prompted your research.
Yeah, there was an article in the Times that was looking at the increasing number of women coming onto the boards of directors of FTSE 100 companies. So that's the UK equivalent of sort of Fortune 100 companies. And what they saw in with these women coming into these positions was what they termed a pattern, that as women were coming into these positions, that the companies were doing worse. They were doing worse in terms of share price. And they suggested that perhaps women were wreaking havoc on these companies. And of course, when we looked at this article, we thought that maybe there was something more complex going on than this initial idea that women were coming in and causing problems.
Loretta, when we think about some of the factors that lead to people, specifically people of color, Black women being appointed to leadership positions, it often comes at a time of crisis. Why do these tasks get placed on their shoulders?
Well, I think there has to be a certain amount of disarray in the organization for them to take the step. Sometimes to hire women of color in these positions, particularly Black women. And one of the problems is that they don't usually even have total consensus to take this step. And so the person comes in and has to manage upwards as well as downwards, because they often have to deal with a split amongst the board of directors or the trustees or the stockholders or stakeholders. And so they come into a very complicated situation. And I could probably talk about a dozen other things that undermine their positions.
Michelle, this is something, I mean, I tweeted about this yesterday, and the reactions were pretty interesting. I mean, there were lots of people, I know myself included, and other professionals of color who often feel this like double-edged sword in taking an opportunity that's given to you, right, that you've earned, I should say, let's be clear, that the opportunities that professionals of color have earned at a time of great duress for an organization. And there's a sort of feeling of, am I here because you want me here, or am I here because you need to clean up a mess?
Yeah, absolutely. You can think of the glass cliff as a kind of poison chalice. Of course, it is an opportunity, and it's one, as you say, that people have earned. But because there's this precarity to the glass cliff, when things are in crisis, when things are difficult, the chances of failure, the scrutiny, the difficulty of that task is huge. And so that means that it's an opportunity that is laced with potential difficulties as well.
Loretta, I'm curious about your thoughts. Specifically when it comes to, you know, something I was talking about yesterday was the fact that professionals of color are often brought in to clean up messes that they themselves didn't even create, particularly when it comes to racism in organizations, sexism in organizations. Often women, whether they're white or of color, are put into positions of power to sort of remedy these things. What sort of psychological toll? And Michelle, I'd like to ask you this, too. You've studied this. What sort of toll does that take on the person who's being given the who's got the opportunity?
Well, the person comes into the position not knowing who to trust. When you have a lot of responsibilities, but not the authority to actually do anything to really fulfill those responsibilities, the person comes in and their circle of trusted advisors is very small. Often they have to seek outside of the company or organization to find trusted advisors because they're not given the full information that they need. I've been in situations where women of color and other women have come into the position and the financial records were withheld from them. Well, how can you steer a ship when you don't know the finances? How can you steer a ship when the existence of secret contracts and deals are kept from you? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of landmines under the feet of these companies and organizations that are in distress that the people taking leadership don't even know exist and often won't be told.
Michelle, what about you? What are your thoughts on the toll that takes on the person who is taking over? Because some folks even yesterday on Twitter were calling it the janitorial, you know, cleanup crew that's asked to come in and sort of clean up these messes when they didn't even create them. What's the toll that can take on someone?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely a personal toll in terms of increased levels of stress. I think in terms of job insecurity, there's evidence that shows that glass cliff positions are often much shorter. So women are more likely to take on CEO positions for 2.5 years, whereas their male counterparts are for 7 years. So there's a certain job insecurity there. I think it's also...
Do we know? I want to stop you there because I think that's a really important point, Michelle. Why is it that men, and I'm assuming here we're talking largely white men, are able to hold on to their CEO positions for an average of 7 years versus women, as you just said, for an average of 2.5?
Yeah, so if women and also people of color are taking on leadership positions in times of crisis, often the cleanup is short. You know, you come in, you clean some things up, or you take on the role as a sort of steering it for a while. And once things look a little bit better, all the men sort of pipe up again, or, you know, the white men come back and say, actually, that position doesn't look so bad. I'll take that again. So either they fall out of the position because they're seen to not being doing well, because it was very difficult to do well in the first place, or if they do well, people come in and say, well, I'll take that back, thanks.
Michelle, do we have any data in terms of compensation for people who take these positions compared to their white male counterparts?
That's a really interesting question. I don't have exact data on glass cliff positions compared to none, but we certainly know that women and people of color are likely to be paid significantly less for equivalent roles, either in terms of base salary, but also in terms of the bonuses. So when we're looking at these type of senior positions, it is often bonuses and incentives that you get for good performance that make up a large proportion of the salary. And again, if you're in these crisis positions, it's very difficult to be seen to be performing well.
Loretta, why is this seen? I mean, this is often frustrating because these opportunities arise often when we are in a company or an organization or a country, even I would point to us here, are in crisis. And that adds a level of stress, but also of pressure to having to maintain, a certain attitude, if you will, certain metrics in order to perform. And God forbid you show any humanity in your performance in a time of crisis, that could be held against you.
Absolutely, because people need confidence in a newly chosen leader. And so if you take the risk of showing your uncertainties, your vulnerabilities, and the fact that people are actively maybe undermining you, then they see that as weakness, and then they start actually contributing to the problem instead of helping the person find solutions to the problem. One of the things I know as a manager is that people will visit their histories and trauma with authority onto the person who's accessible to them. And so you
have
to...
What does that mean, Loretta? Tell us more what that means.
I found that as a boss, as a manager, that quite often people were reacting to my orders to them, not because it was me or because they had a problem with the orders, but because they had been abused by authority figures in the past. And so it takes a while to work through that pact and trauma to understand, is it that you don't want to do the work? Or is it that you don't like how I'm talking to you? Or is there something else going on? And that is a slow and patient process that often in a crisis situation, you don't have the luxury of time to figure out.
Yeah, Michelle, a lot of this is also happening when, you know, as we often talk about the old boys network, when people of color, women and others are elevated to these positions, they often haven't been part of those networks to begin with. How can that further undermine their ability to succeed in these positions?
Yeah, I mean, I think in times of crisis, it's exactly when you need the support of others, isn't it? So you need either resources in terms of economic resources, or you need social resources in terms of the support of other senior managers or of staff and those sorts of things. So in times of crisis, often people want to run to the sides and keep out of the limelight while things are happening, often leaving someone at the front to sort of take all of the criticisms and the crisis on board.
Michelle, how much of these positions are about satisfying the optics of an organization versus actually supporting the person that they've put into the role?
Yeah, so we've done research on this that absolutely shows that it may be more about signaling change than actually trying to achieve change. So it looks good to put a person of color or a woman in charge because it looks like they're doing something different, not necessarily because they want something to change.
Michelle, you've been doing research in this since the early 2000s. Please tell me things have gotten better.
It'd be nice to think that it has, but I don't think we've seen any demonstrable change. And in fact, the research shows that the glass cliff happens over and over and over again. Our research is expanding to look at different areas. So we started off looking at large multinational companies, but we've also seen it in education. We've seen it in sports. We've seen it in politics. So I think it's quite a pervasive thing that doesn't really show much sign of easing up.
And Michelle, is there an acknowledgement at least that women and people of color are facing these challenges? It's interesting that a lot of the people who responded on Twitter were citing exactly this phrase, the glass cliff. And so there is an awareness that this happens, at least among peer groups. But has it permeated the highest levels of the C-suites and K Street?
I think that's one of the achievements that I'd like to think that we've had, is that we have had this phenomenon become something that people talk about. Part of the metaphor of glass is that it's a subtle phenomenon. So people don't set out to say, right, this is a crisis, we're going to put people of color and women in charge, but rather it's much more subtle than that. So I think taking that subtlety away by talking about it, by having a name that we can call it, by being able to point to a position and say, hey, that's a glass cliff, that's likely to be risky and precarious, I think that's one step at least to seeing a bit more acknowledgement of the difficulties that people of color and women could find themselves in.
Loretta, when you talk to women of color, black women that you know that have been in these positions, and when I talk to them, there's almost a feeling of frustration or a feeling of not really understanding what's going on, at least initially, because you have this big title, you have this big job, and yet there's something that seems to be amiss. When you talk to women who have been in these positions, how do they tell you they feel, I guess, in the aftermath?
Well, I usually get called in when they're in the midst of it, because the first thing they say is that they've been given tremendous responsibility without the authority to make the institutional changes and the substantive changes that need to take place. And so if they find that a person is not doing their jobs, they will run into the barrier of the HR team saying, well, that person has been with us for so many years and you can't do anything about it. And so when you have those responsibilities but not the authority to make the changes you were hired to do, that can be very frustrating. And I imagine as they exit those jobs, they talk about the stress levels and their feelings of being made to feel incompetent, even though they're not incompetent, simply because they didn't achieve the goals that they set out to achieve.
And so, Loretta, your experience with this, I wonder if there's a way to, think about this because it's such a double-edged sword. As I said, you want the opportunity, you want to take the opportunity, but then how do you buttress yourself against this glass cliff?
Well, the first thing that I recommend is that an outside organizational audit takes place, not a financial one, though that also will be required. But look at the structures that are in place that are not working for the benefit of the organization or the corporation. These are often longstanding traditional structures that have not been interrogated, and they need to be addressed. And so it usually is an outside eye that can detect these things so that the person at least knows what they're dealing with, because you can't fix a problem that hasn't been identified, and the people who benefit from that problem are not going to run and tell you about it.
Michelle, what are your thoughts on that? We've got about 2 minutes left. I'm curious, what do you think, given your research, that are some of the best practices for navigating glass cliff scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think our research suggests very much in line with what Loretta is talking about as well. But I think it is about resources. So making sure that the person that's taking on this role has the support and is evaluated fairly. As we've talked about, I think this has personal consequences. But I think the other consequence that I think is really important is the consequence that it has for broader stereotypes. So we have this idea that women and people of color are perhaps not naturally suited for leadership positions. And then if they take on these glass cliff positions that are challenging, precarious, and risky, we run the risk of reinforcing the idea that women and people of color are not good leaders. So we really need to ensure that they have the resources to do a good job, but also that they're evaluated fairly. That if they do struggle, or if there are struggles in that role, it's not because of their inabilities, but because of the context and the situation that makes it difficult. And I think if those evaluations are put in place, then it's okay for people to work through difficult times, as long as that's acknowledged.
Michelle Ryan is a professor of social and organizational psychology at the University of Exeter. And Loretta J. Ross is a visiting associate professor in the Program for the Study of Women and Gender at Smith College. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, January 15, 2021. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If we have any non-white listeners, you have figured out these are things to do so that you can maintain your safety in the workplace. Whatever words you need to invoke, if it's quoting policy and procedure, if you have to snitch on someone, whatever it is to make sure that you get, if it's personal protective equipment, if it's time away from the office, if you need to work virtually, if it's getting additional space make sure that everyone is doing their part in terms of distancing, masks, extra hand sanitizer, whatever it is. You got all of that taken care of. If you figured out words to use, if you are in the group, say, hey, I don't want to take the vaccine. I take the Rona seriously, but I just, at least right now, I want to wait on this. You figured out what words to use so that you're not going to be pressured about that. Whatever your stance is to make sure that your health and safety are priority, not compromised at any point as we continue to deal with and navigate these health problems as best we can. If you have figured that out, man, please dial in and share the number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. For folks, as always, if you do not want to dial in or don't want to be recognized, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read your commentary anonymously. Either if you have a scenario you would like counter-racist feedback, hopefully we can try to help solve problems without creating new problems. Or if you have suggestions, if you figured out some things that might help some other victims of racism avoid problems or minimize some difficulties in their work environment, you can share either way, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your commentary on the air. All of that said, the audio segments that we heard quickly before we get to folks who dialed in and such, the first two dealing with different components of the COVID-19 situation. The first segment, they talked about how, at least here in the States, we are woefully behind in terms of workplace safety measures. As a practicing vegan, we touched on this for about a year now. They included in that report meat processing plants. I have noted, because there have been so many news reports about meat processing plants being super spreaders, and, you know, sites, I think they had some of these chicken plants where they had like hundreds of employees who tested positive, and then they had to shut some down temporarily and all this. Like I said, I know that there are produce processing facilities and, you know, even folks that are just going out and picking strawberries or apples or whatever it is, that there have been issues there. But I just have not seen anything comparable to what the last really year and the amount of reports in terms of unsafe working conditions for meat factory workers, meat processing plants. Eat more veggies. But that report, and just talking about how it hasn't been enforced, even though that report did seem like there was quite a bit of Trump bashing in there, but that notwithstanding, talking about how there's not really any federally regulated program in terms of, hey, all of the work environments, we're going to be doing these particular guidelines to make sure that everybody's safe, that that's not in place, that it's just been a hodgepodge, which has been true all year long. Don't see that changing anytime soon, especially since there's so many people who don't think the Rona is real, or, you know, are not really that serious about it. They still want to go out and party and all the rest of it. So no surprise there at all. And again, why you really have to, we as non-white people, we have to prioritize our health and safety in the workplace, because you can see, system of white supremacy, no one else is going to make that a priority at all. Let's see. Continue to snitch, said that repeatedly. Continue to snitch if things are not being done as they should in your work environment. Let's see. The second report was about the vaccines. Now, that report was from Missouri Public Radio, St. Louis Public Radio specifically, but So that's talking about that, the Missouri region specifically. They might not have the exact same policies in other states or other parts of the world, obviously. But they were saying that your employer probably can enforce some sort of mandate about the vaccines, even though they did talk a lot about, well, hey, maybe you should, you know, look for allowances and see if you can find some other accommodations, maybe have this person work from home or whatever it is before terminating them. I am not sure if you are a black person, victim of racism, I'm not sure how tolerant they will be. Now, if you have on MAGA gear, you say you are down with QAnon, maybe that might fly. Maybe. But if you're just a black person and you get to that Nurse Rivers and I don't think that's no. Get your here's your pink slip. Been nice hanging out with you. Have fun with the rest of your conspiracy folk out in the unemployment lot. I think that would probably be the response to a black person trying to do that. But I could be wrong. That's why I said if we have folks who have figured out this is the language, I'm in the group of folks who do not want that vaccine or at least don't want it right now. And whammo, this is what to say exactly. If it's, you know, you go the religious exemption route, we talked about that before. They talked about that in the sound clip. Or if you know, some people do legitimately have allergies or other reasons in terms of why they would want to wait, wouldn't want to do any sort of vaccination right now. If you have figured out what to say to make that be accepted, share. The final audio segment we heard at the beginning. So they're talking about the concept of the glass cliff. We often hear about the glass ceiling where it looks like you get promoted and then you get to a certain point where you don't get promoted anymore, even though you haven't really figured out why. A little different, or the opposite, I guess, of that, the glass cliff, where they put you in position where it's going to be a really difficult position. Company might be on the verge of bankruptcy or, you know, major embezzlement charges or all kinds of things. And they put, or being investigated that maybe a number of Capitol Police officers aided and abetted in the melee treasonous activity in the Capitol last week. Now we'll switch in. Oh, we'll put a black female. Yes. First time ever in charge of the Capitol Police. We're all about inclusion and diversity, sensitivity, yes. Incidentally, that is a metaphor, glass cliff. Either way, glass cliff, glass ceiling metaphor, compensatory call in. We'll mention that tomorrow. But anyway, they get in that cliff, they get in that clip, and they continued. It was like every other second or so, people of color and women. People of color and women, women and people of color, women and people of color. And at a few point, they even said if they promote black women and people of color. And I said, man, I said this for years. White women. That's the way that phrase should be every time. White women. Put that first. White women and people of color. That would highlight the absurdity of it. I think even most of us, even if we're not informed, if we don't study racism, white supremacy, I suspect most victims of racism would at least pause. Do I think white women's plight in the workplace is comparable to black people, non-white people, male or female? I don't know. I think a whole lot of us would have serious pause. Wait a minute. Hillary Clinton, really? She know we're the same stripe in a way, really? Elizabeth Warren? Nancy Pelosi? Anyway, they say that throughout the segment, and then from time to time, they are talking about difficulties, problems that white women face. And even the people that are speaking in this report who are saying women and people of color, this is an audio segment. There's no pictures for any of these folks, except for the host, Tanzina Vega, who I suspect is a non-white person, non-white, non-black person, but I could be in error about that. But Tanzina Vega, she's the host. And then the two guests or two people speaking, Michelle Ryan, Loretta J. Ross. Now, I think Loretta J. Ross is a black person, black female. Michelle Ryan, I suspect, might be a white person. I'm trying to double check now just to make sure. But One, for all of that about women and people of color, the three audio segments that we heard today, the segment about, we had two about the Rona situation and then that about the glass cliff. There's only one male voice. I don't think that was a black male, but there was no audio there either. And then most of them, I think, white women doing all this yammering and talking about the problems that women and people of color face. Any black male privilege. Anyway, so they get in the segment and they're talking about all of these different obstacles. You know, you get these as the Capitol Police, they're in these crazy situations of tumult. And I think Miss Ross, even within that segment, she said that sometimes the organizations, they have to be in a state of upheaval, disorganization to even do this in the first place, which is, you know, when things are stable, our portfolio is looking great, stock prices are up, things are awesome. Now is that the time to bring in President Obama? Oh, no. We'll wait until it's financial ruin. And then what do they say? Yes, now we need custodian. Yes, bring in the Negroes. Yes, we will have our first CEO in the last year of the company's existence. Yes. Wasn't that Herman Cain, too? They talk about people and women of color. I think that was the late Herman Cain. Didn't he take over the pizza franchise that was awful, doing terrible, and then resurrected it, got it doing well again? Anywho, they continued, and I believe it was Miss Ross, the black female victim in that segment. She made the point. She said that she has seen situations where they would have a black person who is, quote unquote, in charge. But you have all this nefarious activity. She said you have all kinds of secret contracts and things, and people are not letting you know about this. How are you going to make effective change, go out and do a great job, and you got all kinds of information that is being deliberately concealed from you? What call that unjust networking might be another manifestation. But on such a regular basis, we hear that sort of thing. And then they said, also, you put these people in these positions sometimes, and it's okay. I come in. We need to make some changes, obviously. You've got a nigger in charge, so things haven't been going well. Let's see. We got some inefficiencies here. Maybe we got old Bill here and Ted and Susan. You know, they seem like we got some shiftless white people. Maybe we need to get rid of a few, see if we can hire, get some young, talented folks, bring them in here, get our morale up and get some. Well, I don't know. Susan's been with us a long time. They don't say that. It's a black person, you know. Been here a long time. I know they're in it. Maybe we can get them some new training. Yeah, we're just not going to be able to let old Susan go. She's important. She's beloved by so many people here, and it just wouldn't be the same environment. We got to keep her. That type of thing. You're not empowered to make the type of changes that might improve this here thing. And or you've got people that are disgruntled about you being put in this position anyway. I can't believe we've got some nigger in charge. We've got a President Obama here. What? Think I'm going to take orders from some nigger. Say that there, too. You got people who are resistant to your management techniques. So just not. And they even said, and I believe this was the white person, Michelle Ryan, with the British accent, she said that it's not like it's so direct where people say, "Ooh, the company's in crisis. Let's find a woman or person of color to put in charge." Oh, yeah, I think it is that direct, particularly not when it's, "Oh, let's find a white woman," when it's, "Let's find a Negro and pretend that they are in charge," especially if we can find a way to maybe blame them for some of why this is all messed up. We can just put it on them and say, "Oh man, you heard that in the clip too." They said, "Oh yeah, they put them in charge of this terrible situation." They said, "Oh, see, the Negro cannot be in charge. Look how they messed up the whole thing. Just ruined it all." Nonsense all the way through. But I do think white people absolutely intentionally we'll do that. Yes, we know it's about to fail. We've been embezzling funds for the past 5 years where it's all about to crash in on us. Let's have the ship go down. We will find Jamal. Do you want to be our first Negro president? It'll be awesome. Here, you take the big desk. We're going to go and embezzle a little bit more. And then this will all be over within about 2 months. Yes, absolutely. I think that sort of thing happens with white people where they're doing it. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident. It is a deliberate act of racism. I think President Obama, a lot of people said, hey, I think that's what this is with him. Financial ruin 2008 and all that. Remember? Anywho, those are the three clips that we heard at the beginning. Transitioning, number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Transitioning, I got an update from our young scholar who is moving off to do academic things in the New England area, so we'll include that. But before we even get to that, with the regards to the Rona situation, one of our listeners wrote Gusty this week and just said, man, this Rona situation is serious. At least one of the people that I worked with, who, you know, one of our clients or what have you, apparently passed away. And it's related to the COVID-19 situation. And I just thought, wow, like, we've had other folks who have reported having people that they know, family members and such, or more distant family members who have contracted COVID-19 and folks who've passed away. But wow, take it seriously. We've had so many folks really all over the world who have reported that they work with people, the folks who are having to go to like a physical location for a job, that they work with people who are not taking all this very seriously, not distancing, not wearing a mask, not washing their hands, just all, you know, of the high risk behaviors that it's been recommended for about a year now that folks not engage in. We've had a number of folks who said, yeah, we've got people who are like that, hard headed, as they say, who are just doing all of those things. Do not allow them to compromise your safety. That's what I said at the beginning. If that means you have to snitch on some of these people, if you have a rapport where you can use your words, where maybe they're not going to start taking it serious for them and washing their hands every 30 seconds and keeping hand sanitizer on their belt, maybe that's not going to happen. But at minimum, they can make sure that they're not behaving in a hazardous manner with you. Coming up and doing a lot of touching, getting really close to you, even coming up really and doing a whole lot of talking. We've had a number of folks who said, hey, I'm not interested in that either. You can go to your desk and get on the phone and call me or message or email or whatever it is. We don't need to be, you know, all up in each other's face to do any chit chatting. Take it super seriously. If you have people who are not taking it serious on your job, that is totally fine. Let them be ignorant. Just make sure that they are not compromising your behavior. Where if you're someone who's been taking this serious and then you start getting lax about things because you're around these other folks. And then, as I said, if you need to snitch, do so. They talked about that in the opening report. Do not compromise your health and safety. The system of white supremacy encourages that sort of thing on a regular basis for particularly non-white people, black people, for us to be reckless about our health and for other people to be totally reckless and disregard our health, safety, and well-being. So really prioritize being safe and taking great care of yourself, especially in a work environment in the midst of all of this. Let's see. We'll go to the phones and then I'll weave in our emails. Like I said, we got an update from our young scholar as well. I guess if we have any folks who are in the school situation, or if we have parents and you have children in the school situation, the same thing, encourage them to take it serious. I know for some folks, they're talking about returning to like being physically in the classrooms, and for other places, they're saying not so fast. They're still doing the virtual learning. Make sure that you're, if you have like college students and such, make sure that they also are taking it seriously. If they have white friends, hopefully not, but they're not being encouraged to, you know, already be looking down the road like, hey, spring break is coming up. Maybe we can all go down to the beach and hang out in a mob and that sort of thing. Encourage them to take it seriously. I know for a lot of young people, it can be that invincibility of youth. Hopefully we have younger cows listeners or folks who have offspring, logic and trying to take things serious with the virus. The number is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who have thoughts, or especially if you have any suggestions, codification this year for the workplace. Before I nab our callers really quick, make sure I just get in with so much of the political upheaval. I know we talked about it a little bit last week. So we got the inauguration looming. I would not discuss any politics in the workplace. We talk about this all the time, but I mean, woof, the past, I don't know, since the whole year, but I would not have anything to say in your work environment about what happened last week, the inauguration, if you think it's going to be violence, what do you think should happen to those people? Nothing about that in the workplace. If white people want to talk about that, fine, let them address it. I think it was one of our listeners last week said, hey, if anything, man, have we looked at our policy for security in the workplace? What should happen if we're attacked or a mob, anything like that? Like, let's make sure we review our security policy. Like, excellent idea. But beyond that, no, not sitting around chatting on it. I'm not offering any thoughts, anything about President Trump, President-elect Biden, none of the above. If you have any white people there and they want to talk about what happened, they're upset about it, they were in D.C., anything, fine. You can listen. You can take notes. Some folks are, hey, let me ask a question. Who did you travel to D.C. with? How long were you there? All of that. But other than that, nothing. Do not get tricked. If they ask you about it, oh, man, I haven't even really been able to pay attention. It's just been one thing after another, hasn't it? What do you think? Give the answer, and then you immediately drop your question so that you can redirect. They can't just pepper you with questions, have you on the stand like you're at the O.J. Simpson trial or something. But if that has come up in your workplace, you can share that as well. But again, it bedrock. That's why that bit of codification is suggested on this platform so frequently, so that you'll just be in a habit. That is an all the time recommendation in terms of not talking about politics. So then when you have really acute and tense moments like now, people already know, oh yeah, he doesn't talk about it. Anyway, back to the report today, and blah, blah, blah. We can just get on with the meeting and things that are related to our job. That's what professionals do. Grant, *61 if you have thoughts to share. Let's see. First few folks.
Hi, Jeff.
Yes, ma'am. Be in Toronto.
Hi, greetings to you, callers and listeners. So, yes, it was very interesting regarding the clip, how it went from the Black Cliff to talk about gender. Lots of talk about gender, I realized through listening to that clip how women, white women, are being marketed as a minority. I hate that term minority because it's not accurate. But it's definitely propaganda to illustrate that somehow women, code word white women, are going through the same type of situations or similar types of oppression as the rest of non-white people. And from experiences within the various careers that I've taken on throughout, some of which yourself, callers, and listeners have heard in terms of experiences, the instigators have been white women. White men would follow suit if they see a white woman instigating white supremacy racism. So oftentimes they are the aggressors. It's their way of, I guess, claiming victimhood. This is how they've monopolized affirmative action, the benefits of affirmative action. So I just wanted to illustrate that point. For the plantation I was on, it was a stressful week towards the end of the week because one of the clients passed away. Come to find out, luckily, it was not COVID, because if it was, it would have been locked down and the protocol would have shifted to 24-hour care, and I wouldn't be able to return to my home for 14 days because of quarantine. So, I don't know how that's going to work out in terms of the protocol, if I would be placed in a hotel and then get reimbursed, or if there's an isolation unit that are designated where I can go to, which is just not enough spaces for those. And that's just for people who just require quarantine for 14 days, not even going to talk about the intensive care units for those who are needing ventilators. There's not enough of those either. Two of the colleagues that I started out with also tested positive for COVID-19. Unfortunately, the colleagues did not take it seriously. They did not consistently wear the PPEs. And unfortunately, they did not take the advice that I had suggested. I'm not saying that I wouldn't get COVID, but I do take all the precautions that I need to prevent it from happening. So I'll reiterate what I've mentioned in previous broadcasts as to some of the tips to consider. And I'll make it for both genders. That will probably be the new part out of it. So what I do in female version is I have a head wrap. In fact, I have two. One that I put it over my head because I know that in the type of industry that I work in, which is social services, clients have a tendency to cough towards your head. if you're working with children tend to cough or talk towards your head, or they're saying something and there's a little bit of spittle, it goes towards your head or clothing. Make sure that you're wearing gloves. Make sure the type of attire that you're wearing, if you can have it in Lycra, if you can, if there's a way in which you can wear a coat over your attire. I wear my raincoat, but it's a short coat, so it'll be easier for me to spray my rubbing alcohol spray which I carry. You buy the bottle the spray bottle from the dollar store. You get your 70% proof to 99% proof, anywhere between that range for your rubbing alcohol. You put it in your spray bottle, carry it in your car, carry it in your purse, carry it in your bag. For each place that you're leaving, so if you're working in different homes, if you're working in different venues, like from hospital to schools, to depending if you're an independent contractor or an employee, part-time, full-time, casual, spray yourself down with the rubbing alcohol before you go from one place to another. Spray your head wrap as well. Get those antiseptic, antibacterial wipes that are gentle on your skin so you can wipe your face. For men, the headscarves aren't going to work. But if there's a way in which you can cover your hair, it's cold outside. So if you're in a situation where a seasonal change, that's winter, you can probably get away with a beanie, depending on what industry you're in. If you're in corporate and you're if you're going from, say, your car to the office, you know, you can wear your hat, not throughout the day in the office, but at least when you're traveling from one place to another, you can still get that spray and spray yourself down when you're moving from one place to another. Wear gloves, bring gloves with you. I know that with my son, I had given him the small spray with the rubbing alcohol, gloves, and mask. When he was using public transportation, he had the glove on and he put his hand on one of the poles and there was an orange residue on his hand. He said that he didn't notice the orange residue on the pole, but it was at least it came off on the glove and not on his hand. So do that. Spray down your seat if you're using public transportation. And definitely emphasize the fact that you need your PPEs. Like it's constantly needing replenishing in the industry that I'm in. So it's your right as an employee to have a safe workplace. And if you got people, other fellow employees, harassing you or making fun of you because you're wearing your PPEs, ignore them. Your health is paramount. When they're doing their 14-day quarantine, at least you will be more safe because you've been practicing the precautions. Continue your social distancing. Advocate for yourself to ensure that others are social distancing. And if they're refusing to do so, then make sure that you back up even further and reduce as much contact with them as possible. I hope that was helpful, and I leave the line.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged to be in Toronto. Very elaborate, detailed code for workplace safety. And I mean, that's what I mean. Like if you just for comparison's sake, in the report they were talking about, like, man, it's a disgrace that we don't have some sort of like, or at least in the U.S., we don't have some sort of like national workplace safety program. Like this is what, hey, do you all have that in Canada? Is there some sort of national?
There isn't a national workplace program. There is the policies to fall back on. Companies have to do due diligence to ensure that it's a safe environment under the occupational health and safety. Part of that is ensuring that at least for the COVID protocol measures, how that's going to be tackled is outlined in the policies So employees have the opportunity to utilize that policy if it's not being followed. And then there are external parties that employees can go to if the company is not following that policy, such as the Labor Board, Ministry of Labor. So they can forward their report there on what's happening. I know that for now, in particular with Ontario, we have a stay-at-home emergency measures. And the stay-at-home emergency measures is that for all non-essential workers, they must stay in their home except for the essentials, such as going out for groceries, to the pharmacy. For non-essential stores or vendors, they can only open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. After that, all vendors are closed after 8 p.m. So they're not calling it a curfew, but essentially it's a curfew. And that's going to be effective. It was effective from Thursday, January 14th, all the way up to February 10th of this year. And anticipating further extension. So sorry if I gave the scenic route, but in short, there are different ways of ensuring that the companies are abiding by the policies, and there are external avenues, regardless if it's unionized or not, to ensure that those companies are practicing those measures.
Much obliged, B in Toronto. We will inquire about that Sunday. We should have our Global Sunday Talk to see, like, people in other parts of the world. Do they have, like, a national workplace plan in place? If such and such happens, like, this is the protocol for all the businesses in the country. This is what you're supposed to do. If a certain number of people test positive, or if anybody tests positive, do they already have like a quarantine plan? Is it exactly the same? Like, everybody knows what the protocol is and people are following it. Like, is that set up in other parts of the world? And if so, let's hear about what type of plan they have. But we'll ask about that this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific, Global Sunday Talk on Racism. Excellent suggestions, though, from B in Toronto, where they also do not have a national plan, but just really specific things to make sure that you're looking out for your safety and well-being in the workplace, just covering your hair kind of head to toe, making an inventory. And not, matter of fact, calculating in, I know other people here are not going to be distancing or whatever it is. So if they're not doing that, then I'm going to, you know, I'll take 10 feet. They're not going to do the distancing to make sure that I don't get close to them because I know they're in a lot of shenanigans. Then you heard what she said. Some of the people that tested positive, they were not following the directions. You at minimum want to try to do the best you can, not just, you know, we flaunted this and we're going out and having fun, partying at some of the hidden parties that they've been talking about, underground parties where it's 400, 500 people packed in, like, for what? Take it seriously. Try to do the best we can to preserve our health. Man, the workplace conversations around all of this have been fascinating. So in the U.S., virus report is reportedly increasing number of cases. They expected this, I guess, at some level because of the post-holiday bump in number of cases. But for some of the sports leagues, this has disrupted lots. For the NBA, they said, okay, we're going to do a 2-week increase in restrictions. They said for 2 weeks, if you have a home game, you can only leave your residence for essential travel, the game, and basically that's it. If you have a road game, you cannot go anywhere. You can go to the game and then back to the hotel, not out to eat anything. My question was, who's going to enforce this? Like, same thing, you know, lots of us have said about things. Who, like, is somebody going to be, like, monitoring people to see where they're going? Are you under surveillance to see about, like, oh, he snuck out to, you know, where, like, how is this going to be enforced? Then they started to have players speak out and say, I'm a grown man. The man not. I'm a grown man. I'm going to go where I want to. Ooh. I have no idea because they already had like fines and things in place. They already had like a protocol. You're supposed to have a mask on and do this, don't do that. They've been fining people. So for 2 weeks, this sort of increased restrictions and to have people already balking and saying that they're not going to do it, like, oof. And it continued. Now it went, okay, what about the vaccines? You know, and it was the same thing. You got, you know, professional sports players. I don't want a vaccine. I'm good. I don't want to do that. And these people are traveling, right? You might have to go from city to city and all this. So they're saying, hey, these folks could potentially be super spreaders because they're doing so much traveling, coming in contact with so many people. Logical. Also, it was, hey, maybe they should be vaccine. Maybe they should be on the list of people that are mandated to get vaccines because they could be super spreaders. That sparked gripes and complaints for lots of different reasons. So regardless of what your work environment is, like, lots and lots of things to be mindful of right now. I cannot say enough. Both of those conversations were about policy and procedure. I've said that for, but it's been a year now. Oof, COVID has caused so many changes to policy and procedure. Like, if you didn't read your policy and procedure before, read your policy and procedure every day now, because, I mean, it's seeming almost like daily amendments to, you know, what is acceptable, what's not acceptable, what are we supposed to be doing to stay safe, what are we not supposed to be suing, what are we not supposed to be doing, are there, you know, going to be punitive actions if you're not, you know, following what the rules and regulations are, is the vaccine included now, is that something potentially on the horizon that we might have to think about, like, lots to process. Make sure you check your policy and procedure. Particularly, I would say, for people, if you work, you have a company, it's advanced enough, you all have enough technology where you have like a digital manual where, you know, it might be easily edited, or they frequently or from time to time have little updates to the policy and procedure. Like, oh yeah, I bet you might be in that group where every day there's a new page to the policy and procedure. So yes, make sure you are abreast of what you are supposed to do, not supposed to do, all of that. And then if anything is not clear, ask questions, maybe via email. In fact, preferably via email, so that you will have an electronic record of clarification. Let's see. Other folks dialed in with a hand up. If you have commentary to share, should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, hello, Gus and listeners and callers. I haven't been on for a while. This is Codified Software Developer in Wisconsin. So I listening to that, listening to Be in Toronto, I just wanted to preface my report by saying thank you to anyone who is out there. I'm going to use a metaphor, on the front line. And has to deal with this coronavirus head on. I am actually very blessed not to have to work, in an office, but I can work remotely, and that's beneficial. So I only have to deal with the pandemic of white supremacy, which is bad enough, but I couldn't imagine dealing with both. That being said, I just sort of wanted to give an update regarding the kerfuffle at the Capitol building a couple weeks ago. So I have noticed at my job, I work remotely, and I recently started a new job about 3 months ago, and I have noticed that this job is very much into what they call diversity and inclusion. And so as a result, they want to have a dialogue, you know, about these events, and my teammates want to talk about these events. And I have just taken a position that I won't say anything. I do have a coworker who is a refined, at this point, he's a refined racist. I looked into joining the employee resource group, the non-white employee resource group at the company, just to see what they were talking about. And I noticed that his name was on the invite list. And so I got a little, I got a little leery of joining that one. But after the Capitol building incident, this group had a meeting, and I was talking to him. So because we all work remotely, we're actually in these Zoom meetings and Google Meet all the time. So just, you know, again, just for anybody who has to be on these Zoom meetings, make sure you have a background up. Google Meet, you can blur your background, you know, make sure your children are not going to walk in so nobody has any information that they don't need about you. And so we're on this meet. He said, oh, are you going to this meeting? And I said, well, I have a lot of work to do. So, you know, I'm going to do my work. You know, really, I didn't want to go because I knew they were going to talk about this Capitol building issue. And I figured that he was going to go. And I really didn't want to bother with that. And so he says, he's like, oh, okay. I said, well, you just let me know what they're talking about. You know, just report back, you know, and that's about it. And he's like, oh, okay. You know, so he makes sure that he tells me, you know, during this meeting, he's like, oh, I joined, and the first thing I hear is one thing we could do is have events to celebrate cultures, you know. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe that's what they want to do. I don't know. And, you know, he's like, oh, it looks like the topic of today's meeting is personal reactions to the sedition yesterday. Well, he did name it correctly, I guess, or I would call it terrorism or whatever. And I said, oh, well, you'll have to let me, I'll say, interesting, you'll have to let me know what the consensus is. And he was just like, oh, it's just emotive responses, no political analysis to speak of. And I'm like, right on. You know, and I wonder if other people on this call are getting this, but I'm getting this sort of, these feelers put out from these white people that I'm around. When you're when you attempt to be codified professionally, white people sense something that's much different about you. And they want to get to the point where they can at least figure out how to control you or how to control your emotions so they can get you to do the things that they want you to do or confuse you even further, what have you. And I believe that it seems like my white coworkers have now figured out that maybe I'm not as confused about racism. I don't address any politics on the job. I haven't talked about the Capitol building issue, and I would say, or the terrorism at the Capitol building, and I would say that there was something that I could talk about professionally, the whole parlor incident, where you're talking about how poorly it was actually engineered. I mean, that is a professional topic. And even then, I didn't say anything, you know. And so I just get this fishing. And I think it's very interesting. So I'm just wondering if other non-white people are experiencing that. And just really quickly, a second issue I found is that after the Capitol building terrorism, I've had white people at my job try to relate to me, and in ways I think are just very, very funny. My boss, we have this thing called happy hour, and we have to go on, it's a team building thing, and we talk about whatever. So I found safe things to talk about, like video games or something like that. And they asked what kind of music I like, and I was just, I try to keep this safe, so sometimes I'll say classical or whatever. And I probably shouldn't have said this, but I said 90s R&B. And And you know, my manager's like, oh, you know, I went to a Genuine concert. He was awesome. You know, that same weekend, I went to a concert with this white rapper. I don't know who the white rapper was. And there were all these white people there, and they were fighting. And at the Genuine concert, there were all these black people there. And I just, nobody was fighting, and everybody was having a good time. And I'm thinking, there's something wrong with this whole racial thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, whatever. I got to go. Bye. You know? So I'm just wondering that, you know, just those two things there. I'm just wondering if people actually experience that, where you start to get this sort of digging into your life, or you start getting these very pointed questions to figure out where you stand politically, or you know, where you stand in terms of racial issues or politics or what have you. And with that, I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Codified software developer. Very good to hear from you. Update. I'm sure other folks appreciate it as well, getting an update. Let's see. The phishing. I think that is very, very common. Other folks can report, people who are listening in, but oh yeah, I think that's in terms of, like, personally, I've experienced it, and then I think we've had many folks who've also talked about just the digging and digging, trying to, you know, get into your background and get some details, especially with what's transpired in the last, you know, week or so. As you said, trying to relate, and this will be my way maybe to bring it up, racism in some way, shape, form. That's why I said, like, it's just, it's nothing to discuss. I mean, you've already got that bedrock part of codification. I'm not going to lean into it, like, nothing to say on it at all. Like, if they're going to talk about it or what have you, as she said, like, nope, I am good. And you can report back. You're going to attend the meeting. You can report back and, you know, let me know what's going down. But that is so common to get in and just rude red, especially if we got a black, as she said, a black person, not white person, period, really, who she is a little bit codified. You know, she doesn't just go around laughing at all of our jokes. And, you know, she speaks, you know, we hear her, but she doesn't just go on and talking about anything. Like, what's, I don't know. She's just not behaving like the way we are accustomed to our victims behaving. Like, we need to take her out to lunch or something. Maybe we can get her at happy hour, get a few drinks in her, and then, you know, get into her background a little bit. Like, that is, that white people are not ignorant about their niggers. So when they bump into one of us that, you know, perplexes them a little bit, oh yeah, they get the study and that they get the fishing, put it that way. But yeah, that's, again, just being bedrock about not talking about politics and that sort of thing in the workplace. As she said, really, even with if they have those sort of non-white organizations, right, where it's going to be black people and we get together and we're supposed to be about diversity, inclusion, or what have you, really, it would be nosiness, or how shall I say, counter-racist experiment. I'm studying. This is just to see what they're talking about. Not that I'm even going to do a whole lot of talking here either. I'm really just, you have, what do they say? You have two ears, one mouth. So you can do twice as much listening, maybe even three or four times as much listening. That's what the purpose is going to be. Not for me to come even here and talk, especially if it's an environment where it's like advertised in a braggy way that this is like about emotive speaking. Like, ooh, that doesn't sound constructive. I'm gonna pass on that one. And if this is whatever function this is, if it's supposed to be geared to non-white people or whatever, and then you got this refined white fella who somehow ends up being invited, like, very dangerous white man indeed. But yeah, the fishing, even when they start fishing and trying to dig and get information about things that are off, like if they start out with the Capitol situation and then it switches to just kind of general background information, like what type of music do you like and all of that. And I remember, I think some years back, Mr. Steele, we were talking about workplace racism. We were talking about food. And I said, man, any of this, I would try to keep it just on things related to the job, because if it drifts to anything, doesn't get any better than tacky. Even food, that's going to be tacky. And people had lots of examples of that, where it ended up going to food, and again, you already know where it's going. Fried chicken jokes and Aunt Jemima and all the rest of it. And the same, even with the music, we've had folks where it somehow it ends up, you know, oh, I hate going to the gas station. The niggers have got, you know, all that loop bass music and everything down at the gas station. It's terrible. Or they drift off into, oh, 90s R&B. Oh, I love it. I was at the Boys to Men concert and the niggers were acting. Really, I'm not interested in hearing about your fascination with Boys to Men or how you were at the Mary J. Blige concert or any of that. Like, let's just stick to the workplace. But yeah, folks, if folks have experience with the white people, get very curious, especially if you're a little bit codified or maybe a lot codified in your conduct in the workplace. And you've noted, like, man, white people are super inquisitive about my behavior, my life and times. Like, feel free to share. But I've noted that that is a very common one. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Yes, white supremacy is pandemic enough, for sure. Let's see. Other folks who are with us, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, callers, and greetings, participants. Greetings, Gus. I'm definitely just an update, really. I'll call last week in regards to the event planning that I was doing for this company. I was able to finally actually get things organized so that the event only went out to other black professionals in the States, so that it wasn't broadcasted to all the other groups. This was an ERG group event, almost specifically targeting, it was supposed to specifically target black people and the issues that they have due to Corona and lack of work, obviously because of the pandemic, mental health. One of the non-white people tried to broadcast this and put this to every other group within the company, and I requested that it didn't get pushed there. And finally, it is going to stay within the group of non-white people instead of pushed out to the others. But that definitely was something I had to consistently push for. Also, in regards to that third segment that was played, I could see how this unfolds on so many levels. I've seen now there was initially a non-white female black woman at my job that held a position of diversity and inclusion at the job. That was her main role in HR. And ever since everything happened last year, she was put under extreme amounts of pressure to the point that she quit. And when I spoke to her on the phone, I recently spoke to her about 2 weeks ago, I asked her, you know, why did they let you go? And she said, no, they didn't let me go. I quit. They were putting too much work on me, asking me to do too much to actually save them. And that's the word she used, save them. And I wasn't willing to do it. You know, there are other jobs where I can get, you know, more done, and some of the things that I would implement would actually be implemented instead of just talk. And that's one of the things that hit me about the segment that was said, was just, they're just talking right now, these major corporations, these international ones, they just want to talk their way through this to the point where they could finally wait until it passes. And during that process, they'll put somebody in position of power that's black. And then after it subsides and passes, then they'll write it off, remove that person, and continue with business as normal. And this is not anything new, of course. We all know this. But ever since this non-white female black woman stepped down, there's been a black man that stepped into his place. And he now is dealing with this situation of inclusion and diversity. And every time I talk to him, he is worn out. I mean, beat. And I don't feel that this is a constructive thing for him. I think he may be under the impression that it's going to be successful, but I just don't see it, unfortunately. And right now, I'm going to continue working with this group, giving suggestions, but I'm going to gracefully, as they say, bow out at the end of my session, at the end of the year. I'll no longer participate with this Black Professionals group because I could see that it's just not constructive. It's good for your career to have it that you plan and organize these events. It looks good. But at the end of the day, it's not leading to anything positive for people within the group. So I'm going to start stepping down bit by bit as the year progresses. That being said, I will mute my line. Thank you.
Right on. I guess I'll commend your effort in putting the event together that's supposed to help out other victims of racism, and then putting a code together to keep that event from being promoted beyond the victims of racism, the non-white people, which is something that we've talked about before with some of the, I guess, perils of social media. And particularly if you are in the same network, like social media network, with some of your non-white coworkers, you can have content that you share, a picture, event, whatever it is, with them if they're okay, non-white person. But if they aren't codified, bam, they can immediately get that and then share to all the white people that they're friends with on social media or whatever it is. So excellent job, I guess, you know, to go around and really enforce and, you know, stipulate, hey, this is not something that we're sharing to the larger network. This is just for us. This is just, you know, non-white people trying to promote and share information with other non-white people at the company about this event. So bravo, job well done. And even there, I would still be thinking like, man, it would not surprise me just because of how we have been conditioned years of terrorism. If someone even then, you know, didn't, well, I'm going to take a screenshot and just show Margaret because that's my friend. You know, I know Margaret is down. She's a good white woman, that type of a thing. Just because our conditioning has been conditioned. But that's it. I think lots of folks have noted the lack of efficacy with many of these groups and saying, hey, I think there are better ways that I can invest my time and energy while I'm in the workplace. And so, yeah, I'm not going to do a whole lot of this, but you never know. It might be an anomalous situation someplace, or someplace it might be where you could have more direct influence than others. It might be in one spot where you just end up with a lot of codified and constructive non-white people somehow stacked up in one group. So, you know, I guess maybe it's best to investigate at least before concluding. But generally speaking, I've heard the same thing almost unanimously about these type of groups. Whites have generally already locked them down to make sure that they will be very non-constructive and will waste a lot of non-white people's time without accomplishing very much, if anything. And they generally tend to be under surveillance, directly, indirectly, both. Yeah, we've heard lots of folks who say these. Sometimes they had a white person present where it seemed like that was that white person's job, was just to be there to conduct surveillance for untold parties. Anywho, let's see. Congrats again for codification, figuring out how to keep folks from just sharing willy-nilly with everyone. That does take some planning sometimes. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with I'm sorry?
I said appreciate.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well earned. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Heard.
How are you?
Oh, right on.
Oh.
Ladies first, Bay Area mom.
Thank you. Thank you for yielding the call, caller. Greetings to everyone on the line. Workplace racism. So, I've been complaining about the supervisor over my cases not doing a home visit for the black child that I have. She's never come, ever. So she's on leave now for a couple of months. A black supervisor is taking her place. I requested that this black supervisor do a home visit, and she did this week. No problem. She could not believe that no one has ever come to the home. No one has ever went over the goals with me. Even when she overlapped before I asked her to come in person, there was no instruction, she noted. And mind you, the overlap is an hour. she came, she observed. Since the child is in school online, he's reverted backward. He won't do anything anymore that pertains to learning. When the supervisor was there, he was taking my finger, he's never done this, to close out the screen so the teachers that are staring him down on the computer can go away. I have a heavy load because the mom works, and she works from home, but apparently she has to work on the phone. So I do the schooling with the second round. He does not like school. It's a fight to get him to participate, and now he's fighting me. I'm agitated because he's not doing anything. So with school involved, I can't get any of my work done. I can't get him to do anything. He's not doing anything. And in school, it takes a lot of my energy just to get him to participate in these sessions. He has maybe, when I'm there, there's maybe three teachers. It just goes out from one to the next. They switch you out, and he does not like it. In the AM, I'm not there, but I come in towards the end. It's awful. When I get in there, he's angry. He's sitting there, but he's bamming on whatever. He's just there because he's forced to be. Apparently, recently, he's just tearing up the house because he's not interested in doing anything. So, the last session we had, okay, because the supervisor had told the mom, you're going to have to start doing these sessions, the school with him. You're going to have to, if you need her help, meaning me, you can have her help you, but you're going to have to be the authoritative, because he's now looking at me, which is true, as an authority figure, and he is not feeling me. He's not interested in me. Right now. So the mom is like, okay. But she doesn't really do it in real life. I'm the one doing it. I don't even think she can. There's maybe five adults that live in the house, but no one's interested in that portion of it. You can tell, oh, it's awful. So the supervisor just said, make sure you tell them that I said you can't do any of this. Make sure you let them know I said it, because that's too much and you can't get anything done. So she was able to see that after class, I may only have 25 minutes before it's time for me to leave after the second class. He's not doing anything with me. He's off to himself doing his whatever it is, release intention. So yesterday, I took him for a walk, come in. And I'm usually have another adult with me when I take him out. But, okay, time to class. No! Mind you, he don't know how to talk. No! Like, oh, I like you using your words, but class. So mom can't get him. She has to pick him up and take him. He's falling out. Everything happens in the playroom as well. I requested that maybe he could shift it another direction, another place, but I can't. I can only suggest. I'm not going to make you do anything. So it was awful. He's fighting, falling out, like stretcher falling out. So it's awful. Flinging everything, the communication board. That he uses, he'll take that and throw that to a whole different city. If he's not interested in anything, it's awful. So, social distancing with toddlers doesn't seem possible. I don't understand any of this. There's no way to social distance with a toddler. Especially these toddlers, because they're more babyish. So there's no social distancing. He would rather me just sit there and hold him and we could just watch videos in real life. He's not interested in anything. He doesn't want to, we don't even do ABCs anymore. No accountant. He knows how to say his ABCs and he knows how to count to 20. He won't even do it anymore. That's just how horrible school is for him. And because my supervisor told the parent that it's okay for me to do school, and she's even overlapped with me doing school and said it was fine, the actual supervisor over the case, the parent feels that that's fine. So I had to have the mom come and, can you help me? Here, I'm hearing her screaming. Carrying on, can you help me? Oh, you need my help? Yes. Here, get some help. Get some work. So that is not okay. And, you know, but he's still not engaged. He won't participate in any of the activities, really. It's awful. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way to, I don't even know how to think of a way to make him interested in this internet learning with these teachers that act like they don't have degrees. It's awful. So I'm trying to teach him to request things. So I have to take something from him and use the communication board. He's knocking everything. It's awful. So there's another job in my company that was hiring and it's not dealing with the children. So I applied for that. They had sent it out. So I applied and I noticed that after I sent in my resume and so forth, they sent it out again like, hey, other people. We're hiring, not for her. If she saw it, because I don't participate in anything, I don't do anything unless it's mandatory. So since I applied for another position versus being so essential, they sent it out again to other people as a calling. I thought, hey, you know, this job is open. It's not just for her. Anybody can get it. So hopefully I'll be able to get that. If not, then I'll just fish around, because they're pushing this vaccine real heavy, especially this part of California. And they have two different kinds, the Pfizer and another one, but there's no choice. You don't have an option. It's just whatever one they stick in you, and you got to do it maybe twice. And you still have to follow the same protocol as if you didn't get the shot. So, and I'm still not interested. And, yeah, so I'm just had to update my resume and tweak it a bit. And so that's where I am right now. And thanks for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Pushing the vaccine. Heard that one at the end there. Very important. Been talking about it. She's in California, Bay Area specifically, but in California, and they've been having a really tough time with the vaccine for a long time. Seems like, you know, months, months and months and months since way back in the summertime. Very intense restrictions and all the rest. So I'm not surprised to hear that the vaccine is being, you know, pushed a little bit more aggressively there. Your workplace situation is tragic for you, tragic for the young fella, the whole family, really. I guess I'd say one, a few months back on our Neutralizing Workplace Racism broadcast, we spoke about burnout and how that's so critical and how a lot of non-white people, we end up being in just really toxic work environments, and it doesn't improve. Like, it's not growing, building our career, our future there. It's not even building our wallet very much. And just being there, it can just wear you down. Like, they just put you in really bad situations and pile all this work up on you and that sort of thing. And it can just burn you out to where you just get frustrated, overworked, disgruntled, angry, all of it. And it reminded me, really, the segment of the glass cliff that we started with, where they put you in these situations where it's set up to fail. And not just you, but this young fella, too. Like, cause she's been talking about having no solid academic plan to help this young student who needs more help. It's not justice, as outlined by Mr. Fuller. Those who need the most help get the most help. It's whatever to these Negroes. And then I think we have an audio report tomorrow for the compensatory call-in describing how black people, non-white people, victims of racism, since the Rona situation in the U.S., the non-white students who are already doing poorly in schools, they have been just absolutely wiped out. And it sounded very similar to what our Bay Area mom was describing with this young student, where she was saying, you know, just taking her hand and using it to close the window where the teachers were and getting totally loud and frustrated. The little bit of progress that he had in terms of verbals and using his words is even regressed from that. I don't even want to do that. Like, that is very common amongst many non-white students through the pandemic. And that is probably something that white people predicted would happen in the midst of, especially if this is going to be something that's long lasting, a year or two. Like, oh, yeah, they'll be. Whole good generation of them wiped out academically as a result of this. So all of that just reminded me of the title that we saw, a different manifestation of the report we started with, the glass cliff. But I think just I think you used the word awful. It's just awful in describing like just being put in a situation designed to fail. Can't even do a supervision with this young student. That type of thing. Things that are policy and procedure, protocols that are supposed to happen, and it just doesn't happen. We got all kinds of excuses. I'm at home playing on Zoom and all the rest of it. And when you finally get like, I can't believe it. You mean we haven't had supervision for this young fella? Like, what in the world? What is going on? It's a total failure. Not the people who need the most help getting the most help. And then seeing how no one, other resources in the house are just not available, like all of it. Just What does Dr. Welsing say? When you play around with sex, joke is on the offspring. Anywho, I know we do have educators, so if folks have any suggestions, but I think this sounds like a situation that is designed to fail for everyone. This sounds like nobody is vested in seeing these children do well, or at least the people who are in charge, the white people who are in charge, they're not vested in seeing these children do well. They're not seeing the workers thrive and do well individually or for these children. I mean, in my view, you're doing the correct thing. I'm going to see if I can get another position and move on, because it is absurd and designed to be. I can't emphasize that enough. Like, this is what they want. They want this young man to struggle and not be able to learn. We're not even going to try. We're not even going to fake it that we're trying to put some sort of competent academic plan together for him. Nope. And how similar does this sound to what other black parents, black children experience, really, anywhere in the world? System of white supremacy. Much obliged, our Bay Area mom. Self-care, can't say it enough. Burnout is a super problem. And when we end up stuck in these type of dead end and designed to be shabby situations, that can be a recipe for burnout. In the same Golden State, Rob, did you have commentary, sir? Thank you for your patience.
Yes, thank you. Greetings to hosts, callers, and listeners. Just small reports this week. San Diego is on a mandatory shutdown. At this point, I guess they're paying attention to the numbers, rise and fall of the COVID, I guess, depending on how full the emergency rooms are, is, I guess, depending on when things will open back up. So even though San Diego is shut down, businesses like local eateries and bar/restaurants have still been operating, and it is, hasn't been a lot of enforcement to shut the places down. Like, I'm right across the street from the establishment that's open right now. So technically, businesses are operating illegally. As far as my work situation, I am laid off due to COVID. My unemployment benefits have ran out. And so, like a lot of other people, I don't have an income at this time. And with the unemployment benefits being exhausted, it's supposed to be a federal extension applied to where people that already have claims in don't have to refile. That hasn't kicked in yet. At this point, I'm not that worried. I would say that I'm not sure. It's a lot of uncertainty at this point as far as finances look going forward. So that is a bit of a concern, not a huge concern at this point, but it is something for me to think about and consider moving forward. And that's all I have to report at this time. Thank you.
Much obliged, Rob in Wisconsin. Can say that again. Uncertainty. I think folks all over the world are saying that to some degree. Well, racist white supremacists maybe a little less, but many victims probably saying the same thing, uncertainty. So he said San Diego is on lockdown, I guess due to I don't know if it's a hospital situation or number of COVID cases, but as I said, I know California, it has been really bad. So at least that's what's been reported. I'm not in California. But the shutdown to be that massive, like, wow. Kind of the same thing I said, though, with the enforcement. Like, I don't know what that means, like, in terms of if police are out stopping people or going in restaurants and asking people, what are they doing open? Are you distancing? Like, I don't know what the enforcement of all of that looks like, but wow. In terms of the impact on jobs and such, I think white people were out protesting back in April, so I can only imagine the number of folks who are distraught or also feeling a great sense of uncertainty about, you know, what things are going to look like and how long this is going to last and, you know, all the rest of it. So, oof, man, it has been tragic on many levels and just extremely nerve-wracking, I think, for folks all over the world just trying to figure out, you know, what is, when is all of this going to begin to look like it's concluding, and when are we going to be even, you know, able to plan, you know, much less get back to a normal work schedule, get back to a normal school schedule, and all the rest, much less be able to leave the house without having a mask on and all the other things. So, yes, thank you, Rob in California. Much obliged for the update, and hope things for you and the rest of us, we are able to kind of maintain until things stabilize a little bit to kind of get back on a little bit firmer ground. But uncertainty, that has been the word for about the last 12 months now, man. Context of white supremacy, neutralizing workplace racism. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We have less than 60 minutes left of the program, so make sure, folks, if you have commentary, don't dally, wait till the last minute. If you have suggestions for the other folks who shared thus far, your own situation, feel free. Nab some of the other folks who dialed in with a hand up. Let's see. Mm-mm-mm. Other folks that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter in Florida.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. Speaking of firefighting, I was just listening to the program, and at the same time, just recently just thinking about how COVID-19 is complicating the job that I retired from. There is on the job a nature of protecting oneself against what you can pick up from other people by, you know, by going on the mercy call, you know, wearing gloves, that sort of thing, especially when you're handling a needle or touching someone. You never know what is on them. The blood is obvious, but, you know, other things that possibly you can pick up. You know, the whole thing with sometimes a mask even would be required, but with the pandemic, even in the fire station itself, you're talking about 24-hour shifts of employees coming from outside of from where their home abode is to work, and it's on shifts, 24-hour shifts, that sort of thing. and it can get up to 7 to 8 personnel at a fire station. And a fire station is about the size of something comparable to a four bedroom, two bath house, or maybe a three bedroom, two bath house, and also along with that, a few offices, that sort of thing. But it could be crowded in a sense, you know. So I don't think I haven't really dwelled into it because most of everybody that I know that was on the job is like myself, retired. So we don't, you know, and I'm not that curious to want to find out. I'm just thinking about it, that I know it's a very complicated situation involving what to do and how to do it. It was kind of critical even before, but with the pandemic, you know, I can imagine. I can only imagine how much more complicated things would be, you know, as far as training and there's more to do than just going on rescue calls and fire calls, and I that has to be altered in some kind of way. Just thinking, and that's all I would say. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. I was thinking that might be in the essential worker category, where those folks might have to be at the front of the line, you know, to get the vaccine and all. If that makes a difference, they said, even if you do that, you still got to wear a mask and take the protocols. But yeah, I would think because of the, as you described, the close living quarters, and then who knows what you might, you know, run into on the call and have to touch and all that other stuff. If you have to do any CPR, first aid type of thing. So absolutely. That is all kinds of hazard under these conditions. And I think they'd even said that they had all those when they had the wildfires on the west out here. Right. And at the end of the summer, they were saying the Rona complicated everything. Got to have a mask on, got to social distance and all the rest. So, yeah, I can't. This would probably not be a time where I'd be really enthused about that profession, or really anything where, yeah, you're going to be in close emergency contact with other people. Like, something to think about.
Yeah, that's going to be. They're probably going to be required to take that vaccine. I'll be surprised otherwise.
Absolutely. They're talking about saying, hey, professional athletes, they could be super spreaders. We can't have you, you know, pop into L.A., play the Lakers on Friday, and then have you fly across the country to play the Knicks on Sunday. Like, oh, no, you might have to be front of the line too. They were just, you know, hypothesizing. Apps, I would think same would apply for firefighters, have them out in all those dangerous situations and what have you, in contact with so many different people. Let's see other folks who dialed in with a hand up. If you have commentary to share, your own situation or suggestions based on what has been shared thus far, line should be open. Proceed.
Kyle's guest and Gus. I was just trying to think of a suggestion for the young lady who had the kid, the toddler that didn't really want to learn anything. And then I was also thinking about myself in my work situation, where I thought about what you just said about being in situations where it's designed designed to fail. And after thinking about that young lady situation, then I also thought about my work situation, and I was also in a situation where I probably should have quit because it wasn't like a win situation. Well, maybe that's a metaphor. What I mean is it wasn't a situation that would be constructive for me. So But I also wanted to add that sometimes when you use certain words to describe your situation, it kind of makes it difficult for you to deal with. So I was just listening to her, and she used a lot of words. She used the word a complaint. And so I went into Mr. Fuller's book, and, you know, you were saying it's probably wise to use words like report, because then if you go to your supervisor and you want to ask questions about getting constructive suggestions about how she could approach, you know, the toddler in the situation and speak to the parents, you know, then you would make a report to them. So that was just my suggestion. Thank you, Bob. Thanks. I'll meet my life.
Yes, sir. Much obliged. I think a lot of us can relate to being in those type of situations. It is very popular. That's why I said it was so tacky in that report. They said, no. I don't think people sit down, white people. I don't think they sit down and look for situations and say, oh, man, this is absolutely toxic. Like, there's no way somebody's going to be successful here. Absolutely messed up. We have a black person we can put in charge of this. Oh yes, we'll grab. Yes, like yes, they do this sort of thing deliberately, on a regular basis, on a large scale, and on a smaller scale. I'm sure we have lots of folks who can relate to that being put in these type of predicaments. There is no win. There is no success. There is absolutely nothing that can be done to resurrect this situation. It's just going to be a lot of grief. And then perhaps even people blaming you for this when they knew from the very beginning that, oh, yeah, this is going to be messed up completely. Mm-mm-mm. Oh, well, as long as I don't get blamed for it, that happens all the time. So, yeah. Just a big part of the system of racism, and absolutely words. Very important being mindful about how we describe things in the workplace, even in situations where it's looking like, yeah, this is going to be doom regardless. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up. We have other folks. Let's see. In fact, before I nab some of our other folks who dialed in with a hand up, I guess I will make sure to get in one of our young fella, our young scholar, who did give us an update, dealing with the whole going to school situation and saying, wow, he's moved in with his young roommates, white roommates, and it seems that they are all safe and sound thus far. No difficulties. Hopefully it'll stay that way for the duration. He said that they have been taking the Rona situation seriously, which is, I think, something we talked about. That was a huge concern being in a college environment, because they talked about how unsafe so many of the campuses have been, because young white people predominantly not taking it serious and doing beer pong and all the rest of it. But he said they, you know, have been, they had already talked about that one. But he said that they have followed through taking it seriously. They're not having house guests and all the other craziness, that they have been kind of just being young scholars, doing their work, staying at home, got groceries, and have just been there. So he said thus far it has been very calm, no problems. I didn't get to ask any questions about the Capitol or anything like that. But like, as I said, hopefully we can get maybe, you know, one or two more updates throughout the year. And again, using this as an experiment, like, let's just see. And what interesting times to be able to observe younger individuals classified as white, to see how they respond. Might even, you never know, you might even have some Trump supporter roommates, right? We don't know. So we'll see. We'll wait, as I said, maybe we can get one or two more updates through the calendar year, and he can let us know if he's making sure to stay safe, and then maybe practicing some codification as well. Let's see. Other folks dialed in. If you have suggestions, commentary for any of the folks who dialed in already or your own situation. I think we did have the question about if you have been in a workplace situation and you feel like, hey, I'm somewhat codified. You know, at least I function a little bit differently than some of the other black people who also work here. And, you know, you felt like white people were curious about you. You know, kind of kept an eye on you or kind of asked a few more questions of you to try to get some information or what have you. We had that one caller who asked about that, codified software developer. But if we have other folks who have comments, questions, suggestions, feel free. See if folks are getting their thoughts together. We should be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review, prepare for the inauguration and what has gone down the past 7 days or so, second impeachment of our president. And then we'll be here, as I said already, Global Sunday Talk on Racism. Irregular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific this Sunday. And then we'll be here on Monday as well. Dottie Bosque, she is former Olympic athlete for Team USA. She's, I think, pretty proud vegan and does not consume any dairy products. We'll be talking about that and racism on Monday. White woman. We did have a black guest on this week, but still white guests only, even though we did have a non-white guest. But we should be on every day from now until Monday. All programs, normal broadcast time. I guess stay tuned in if you think the content constructive. And in fact, we've been on every day since, I don't even know. They've all kind of blurred together since the power outage. I think like Tuesday. We've been on every day this week since Tuesday. We had Pat McKenna on, O.J. Simpson's investigator for his trial. Alan Dershowitz may be coming to the cows shortly. We'll have to see. But I did reach out to him almost on a lark. And lo and behold, I heard back. See if we can get a date and time, but we are slowly stacking up members of the O.J. Simpson defense team on the cows. We might even have to break down and see if we can get some of the prosecution members on as well. But the O.J. Simpson cows library is looking pretty spiffy by the moment. Lots and lots to learn about racism, white supremacy with that case, the book club, all of the above. But yes, looking forward, and perhaps Alan Dershowitz on the program soon. Even if he's not, we'll be here every day from now until Monday. Lots of counter-racist content. Let's see. Other folks have thoughts, observations?
No, I just had a quick observation about the school situation. I have a son who started high school this year, and due to the coronavirus, I was reluctant to send him to school. And of course, so he was remote at home, and the way his school was set up, they actually had class every day. They split the school into two cohorts, so to speak. And half of the school would be in the school, and the other half would be remote and attending class via Zoom. And so he would have class at the same time, but I noticed that his grades were falling and that he just was becoming very listless and very depressed. And it was due to, I believe it was just due to the fact that he didn't have the adequate socialization. So even if the children are getting maybe the academics, man, they're still not getting the socialization. I have a friend who's a psychologist, a black female psychologist, and she said she's been getting a lot of referrals for testing for children for learning disabilities. And these children don't have learning disabilities. It's just that the stress and the uncertainty of the time is affecting them greatly. And this is not just non-white children, but white children as well. But particularly, I think this is particularly hard for non-white children, since already most of our children are going to schools where there aren't adequate resources in the first place. So I just wanted to mention that. And also, I've been listening to the book club, and it has been actually pretty good. I've been enjoying it. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, O.J. Simpson, man, everyone, quasi-expert, if you're a counter-racist, attempted counter-racist, quasi-expert on the O.J. Simpson case. But put what she just said, excuse me, put what a codified software developer, put what she just said in terms of the impact on Black children, victims of racism, Black children, with all of this, you miss out on, and for young children, so much of school is the social component. I mean, yeah, you're doing the learning, all that, but I mean, being around the other children and getting to do all the fun and playing around and just learning the socialization aspect and how to behave and play nicely with others. Missing out on all of that, and then missing out on all of that word again, uncertainty, for who knows how long. You know, it started off maybe a month, a week, and now it's just going on and on, like years, like who knows, like huge impact. And then you already have these students whose needs are not being met, are not being well served, and then to have this on top of that, like, be really mindful. I think that was one of the reports that I was talking about that we might be hearing tomorrow, that they were saying, even if you directly have offspring or just around children, whatever it is, be really mindful. They may be conducting themselves as though they are okay, not having a problem, but I mean, missing this much time away from school and their friends and all the rest of it. It has been a huge impact. And just that word again, the uncertainty, that has a huge impact on children. It's been, even for them, being around adults who are super stressed and worried, that has an impact on them. So yes, be very mindful. If you have children or around children, whatever it is, that all of this has been extremely hard on them. And even if it doesn't look like, you know, they're struggling and having a lot of mental difficulties and all of this, check in with them anyway, because very likely they are. It's tough as it has been on adults. It has been just as tough on children, if not tougher. They've had, you know, just like us, their whole routine upended indefinitely. Let's see. Much obliged, codified software developer. And even that, like that, because they've, in some places, like she was saying, they have the split. Like sometimes it's virtual or it's hybrid. Sometimes it's virtual. Sometimes it's in person. And all the, I mean, woof, man, stability. Let me know what to expect so I can really excel academically. All of that in the trash for this year. Really, for the last 2 years, it's looking like now. Other folks with comments, observations to share?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to guests, the host, the listeners and callers. I was thinking about the portion of the audio segment where the lady was saying how they will put a non-white person or a Black person into a high position. That reminds me of what's been going on at our job. But with this guy, as I shared before, a victim of racism, he was pretty much given his first supervisor job when the older white guy that I used to speak about, he retired. Then they gave that to him. Then a white woman was given the job that he has now before he got it. So she was only in for like 11 months, not even really a whole year. So that's another thing they like to do too. But I think they do have like legal issues going on with, I guess, with what they call discrimination. But I wanted to start off by sharing, there was a customer, and sometimes I get these kinds of customers that want copies, and they're doing a name change where I guess they're doing the sex change thing, transgender, and the pronouns. I know I've spoken about this before with the white people on the job, like, hey, you know, can I get some advice as to what to say? And I hadn't really gotten a response on that. So I would either just say, was like, and responding to them, was like, correct, sure, and yes, that seems to be working whenever they ask me something, instead of the ma'am and sir, because one of the incidents I shared, a person was upset of being called a ma'am, but this was a male, okay? And when the white woman, who now is a devout CLIQ member, she walked off, and the guy said, I don't know why she didn't get that right. I'm a guy. So that's been something that's somewhat I've been thinking about. Number two is there was an email that went out about, it was titled Departmental Goals 2021. So I stopped at 1,000 reports, right, on the 22nd of December. So I went from 1 to 1,000 in like 1 year, okay? I started in 2019, but all my other reports in the notebook are in the phone. So they obviously, like I said, they were reading the emails, but they never came and talked to me. So all of a sudden when I stopped, you know, they want to send this email out saying, just wanted to let everyone know that they're doing a great job in the department. And the clerk wanted us to come up with, or wanted, I guess, the supervisor in the administrative meeting they had last week to come up with a list of goals or whatever that may mean. Because she was saying, well, this year we have the indexing imaging project going on and people are working on a checklist. But other than that, does anyone have any suggestions on improvement process and other kind of goals and things like that? If you want to share on the topic, just send me a message. And she used the metaphor that in all of the departments, you are the cog or the clog or whatever cog that keeps the clock going, or some metaphor she used. Okay, so here again, the proverbial behaviors, they put my name first in these kind of emails. Now, no time before my name went first, but now they want to put my name and the other black people name, but my name definitely, is because I think they wanted to hear more of my views and what those emails were, because I was talking about their racism, but I was using my own terms and I was mixing up different things. So they had never seen that before. So, but they never came and talked to me. Okay. My next one is, there's a black female who is a supervisor, and I just noticed just something that was interesting and kind of sad. It looks like she's been really stressing out, and she's maybe about 40, 41, and her hair has been becoming more gray, like very gray. And I could just tell, like, I'm thinking it's due to stress. and another black person victim is noticed that as well, which she said in a report to me that two of her, of this black female's employees, she saw the two of them hug each other. And I'm going to quote what she said. She said, "I think that's the start of a new alliance." That's what she said to me. And I'm not even surprised because they're pretty much in the same circle. My next one is, there was a comment made. I was talking to an area where there was mostly black people, and they apparently like to intrude racist suspects. I was just stopping to get envelopes for my mail pickup. So she, the white woman, she walks up to the printer like she was going to get something off the printer, but that wasn't the goal. And she looks toward us and says, "Oh, are we in a huddle?" I guess what, H-U-D-D-L-E, are we in a huddle? We in a huddle? And the black female supervisor says, "No, we just were talking or whatever." So I found that interesting. She used that term. I thought about a football team. So definitely it sounds like racism was practiced. There was a passport couple that came in. They had a white child and blonde hair, blue eyed, of course. And I know I've shared in the past about white children and how they are definitely taught to practice racism at an early age, not far from birth. So the black female said to the couple, "Hey, you know, like, can y'all step outside, you know, so we can get prepared to take the picture?" So the baby was just fine, quiet, you know, well-behaved or whatever. And when the parent, the mom, was about to stand the child on the stool, and the black female was approaching her with the camera, she starts crying. I mean, like, crying badly, right? So, you know, I'm just observing, and the crying gets worse and worse. So, not a supervisor, but a coworker, she walks from the other side of the office, what I call the white side, quote unquote, with the headset on, saying, no, asking, "Oh, did you pinch her? Did you pinch that baby?" Saying that to the black female. And, you know, white people are definitely dismissive as, "Oh, she was just joking, right? Did you pinch that baby?" So the black person, always criminal and defective, always up to something. The baby was just crying, I think, because the baby was racist. But that white person walked up and was trying to, I guess with some kind of flashy object, trying to get the baby to cheer up so the baby can smile for the picture. So it looks like it didn't work. Another person comes from the front counter, and she was also trying to do something to help cheer the baby up, calm the baby down. I said, "Man, I never seen this happen with a child before that was not white, if the baby started crying. But they were doing this because the baby was white, you know, placing a lot of value into the child. So I was trying to do something myself, and then I got up, and I was going to go ask the supervisor something about UPS envelopes, FedEx. And the non-white, non-black person, she says, she asked me, "Oh, well, blank, did you scare the baby?" And I said, "Maybe." Because there's been times where I could just walk up and it'll be a white baby, and the baby will be afraid, okay? Not all the time, but there'll be sometimes. So I said, "Yeah, maybe I did scare the baby, you know, because the baby is racist," but I didn't say that. But that's what I'm thinking. That's why I responded in that context. But the white woman she was like, oh no. Because, you know, she heard what was said to me. All right. And that's all the reports I have. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Everybody still there?
Oh, I'm here.
Yes, sir. Oh, okay.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. Let's see. I had my little list ready to roll. The pronouns I have gotten.
I didn't speak
ahead. I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying with the pronouns, I've gotten in trouble with that myself. Like, man, sometimes it's just best to correct. Yes. Right. Thank you. I've gotten in trouble with that myself. And, you know, I'm not trying to guess. And because sometimes they can get really curious, the different sets of pronouns and such. So, yeah. Yes. Correct. Right. It will not be Gus T that they cough and gripe and say he disrespected. And I just told the person I wanted to be called, you know, sir, I'm clearly a man, and all the rest of that. Not going to be me. Just right. Correct. The tackiness in the letters, we had talked about that before, I think, particularly when they like move a black person's name a little bit higher up the list, if they're going to send out like some sort of group email or communique and they have a black person's name at the top of it when they normally do not, you know, even talk to us when they see us in person. And then the invisible man metaphor, you are the cog that keeps things going. That is right out of Ralph Ellison. Like, you're not a person, man, not a human being, some sort, or not even a machine. You're a part of a machine. The people, or the parents rather, that came in to get their passport and they had the child, I felt like there was a situation with a child at the courthouse last week where they were being tacky for no reason then too, where the wife, oh, it was the child started crying. That was what it was. They were, I guess they were there for the marriage and started crying when the white woman came up and tried to grab up the little black child. His self-respect radar was working well. For this one, they come in and the white woman comes up and did you pinch that baby? And I felt like those type of incidents where a black person gets accused of something in public, I feel like those specific acts of racism, because it just wouldn't be if a white mom was out in public. I think it would be, the chances of that sort of thing happening are so rare that some stranger that you don't know, it's not like you all have a rapport and, oh, I'm just, you know, joke, bub, or whatever, good to see you and all that. No rapport, someone you haven't seen ever in your life to come up, you're with your child who's crying and say, oh, you pinched her, didn't you? Like, I don't know. I could be totally wrong. I don't have children, so I guess, you know, maybe that's a common thing. You know, people come up and do that. I would think it would be something soothing, or, oh, what's the matter? That type of thing where they do the baby talk and all that, not some accusation that you're a bad mom. You abused her, didn't you? All right, come on. Let's see. Oh, and I had the New Alliance one as well. I'm all for no hugging. I don't even know why folks. See, we talked about that on the slide too. The people not doing the distancing in the workplace. We said that people who've just poo-pooed all of that. I'm going to hug folks when I want to. I see my sister here. Give her a big sweaty embrace and all the rest. We talked about all that. So just make sure you're maintaining your own distance, following the rules, and yes, you could be mindful of the new alliances in the workplace as well, with click members or whatever else in your workplace. You can, you know, make your observations there too. But man, the flagrant disregard for the Rona and distancing has been on display a full year. Let's see. Do we have other folks? Much obliged caller in Florida. Do we have other folks who had commentary to share? Let's see. We have like a little less than 20 minutes left in the broadcast.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just commenting on the school aspect for my son and my offspring. It's been very difficult because I'm working on trying to make sure that he doesn't stay online, going on these strange websites and doing anything else that might be counterconstructive. But at the same time, it's so difficult because I literally have to sit next to him while I'm doing my work and he's doing his work. It's almost unavoidable at this stage. And getting him outside is the most, getting him outside, cooking with him, and playing board games with him are the only things that are really keeping him engaged. Because I'm really trying to steer him away from going down that, as they say, rabbit hole when it comes to the internet. So I have to literally sit next to him almost all day so that I can keep tabs on what websites he's going to and why he's going there. And as Codified Software mentioned, it's just trying to make sure that they're not, you know, in any kind of depressed state, and recognizing their behavior patterns and seeing if anything really shifts in the process. Good luck to everybody that's in the same boat. Just stay close to them and monitor them as much as you can. With that said, I'll be on my line.
Much obliged, sir. Gus does not have children. That said, I have seen a number of reports that have talked about that because so many children, young people in general, they're not in school. They're having to do all this virtual work. So they're just spending tons of time in front of a screen, and people already had concerns about, you know, maybe overexposure to all that screen time for young people. And to now have, you know, an increased explosion of screen time when it's not a whole lot that you can do about it other than monitor. I know some people have put limits on it, but it's hard when everything now is on screen. I mean, just try to do the best you can. I think getting outside is great. We had talked about the cooking before. I think that's great, getting outside. Just, you know, trying to making the time to do the activities. But absolutely getting away for some exercise and just the mental health of it all, to get away from that screen and actually talk to a real person who's actually in front of you, or better yet, let's go outside and get some fresh air and feel the sunshine, get some vitamin D and hear the birds, and maybe we'll eat well. I was gonna say maybe see some other people, but at a distance and maybe with a mask on. But yes, that is challenge I think a whole lot of parents are facing right now, and trying to look out for their children's health, mental well-being, physical well-being. Like, man, uncertain and challenging times all the way. Other folks, comments, observations, suggestions? Have about our last five or so. We'll check in once more and make sure everybody is satisfied, or if they have anything else to share. Again, we should be here for our compensatory call-in tomorrow. We'll kind of catch up on what has gone down the past 7 days. I think we should have a report talking about the school situation and how it has impacted black children, especially in having COVID disrupt so much of the learning process over the last year, basically. But that'll be tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward. And then, as I said, Global Sunday Talk, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Sunday. Dotsie Bosk, she'll be here Monday, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then hopefully we'll have Alan Dershowitz. Hopefully we'll have him coming up soon as well, continuing our study of the O.J. Simpson criminal trial. But, man, for the workplace racism component in particular, burnout, we had talked about that before. I'd said I felt like we hadn't talked about it enough with all of the chaos, because you'll have people who are stressed both ways. They'll be stressed saying, man, I just want to hold on to my job. I just, you know, with all the restrictions and the shutdowns and the layoffs and furloughs, I just want to keep my job. Like, and that is 1,000% logical. So you'll have people there. And I would suspect you might even have people who I'm, you know, willing to go over and beyond, you know, just to show that I'm a quality employee worth keeping around. Understand the logic in that completely. But I could easily see racists using, manipulating that energy and saying, oh yeah, I know we got a lot of folks there, you know, going to do everything they can to hold on to their job and that sort of thing, so we can get over and have people working insane shifts and doing all sorts of unreasonable thing, making unreasonable requests, if they know, oh yeah, this person is going to try to do anything, they want to make sure that they stay in our good grace and hold on to this, you know, job. That can also be pushing you into really working yourself into a lot of stress and doing a whole lot with that mindset. So just be mindful. Do some checking in on your offspring's well-being. How are they doing mentally? Making sure they're not depressed or having a lot of anxiety. The same thing for yourself. For if you're stressed about keeping a job, stressed about losing a job, stressed about the uncertainty of all of that is totally natural, and probably everyone else in the world is having those same feelings. But just really important in terms of how we manage and making sure that we're not just drifting off into, as was stated, surfing a lot of craziness online for hours on end, or binging a lot of toxic content, eating a lot of toxic content. None of those are healthy ways to respond to a lot of stress. Getting some exercise, eating healthy foods, getting quality rest so your brain computer is working well to help solve those problems. All of those things, I think, help us be in a better mental state, better physical state, better able to solve problems. But be mindful of your mental well-being. It is very, 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 very stressful, very, very toxic, and probably more of both to come. Any other observations, thoughts folks want to share?
I'll be right.
Rob in California.
So just a couple of quick observations. So under the system of white supremacy, I am a black male that has, how would I describe it? Have not been in a position to benefit financially off of, the work that I put in, like when I'm going to work, like because of the system of child support and, yeah, basically because of the system of child support. So, being under this system, I'm in a position where, because I owe for child support, when I file taxes, I don't get a tax return that goes to, what I owe for real years for child support. And so my observation is that it's been two rounds of stimulus checks that went out to the general public. And so since I owe for child support, the first round of stimulus check when it was $1,200, I didn't receive that. I received a letter and was told that that would be applied to my arrears. Now, at this time, unemployment benefits were kicking in, and this is the same time that the extra $300 per week was being added to the unemployment benefits. So now with the second round of stimulus checks, the $600, interestingly enough, I received the $600 payment, but also at the same time, I'm not receiving unemployment benefits. So I found that very interesting. And my second observation is I also received EBT benefits. I'm not sure what it's called in every state, but it's basically like a food stamp. It's on the card now, but the state awards me funds so that I can feed myself. And so I was receiving, while it was stated that I was working, I was receiving $30 monthly. Okay, and then so when I wasn't working, that benefit amount went up maybe $75, $80 monthly. And so the observation is I received a ridiculous amount of EBT funds recently, like a ridiculous amount, an amount that would an amount that would feed a couple of families. And so with me being a single male, I find that amount of funds added to my EBT account very interesting. While the while I received the stimulus benefits this time, and while there are no unemployment benefits available. And thank you for listening.
That is interesting. Yeah, I guess they probably have details to explain all that. So long as they didn't make some error where they try to come back and make you repay whatever the total was sometime later, like, oh, that was a staff error, and you know, we want our money back, you know, that you're defrauding the government of California, like something like that, as long as it's legitimate. Say just try to make constructive use. I guess that's the best all of us can try to do, try to make constructive use of the resources that are available to us. If you could go to one of the bulk stores and, you know, try to bulk up, that way you don't have to do it. You can save time and energy. You don't have to, you can minimize going to the grocery store and save some money. That way you can have your supplies stored up at your residence. And I guess except for like fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, but other than that, you can have whatever other food staples, have it stored up, and yeah, not have to worry about shopping. And you not have to worry about the Rona. Everything is shut down in California. So, hey, you can minimize your grocery shopping trips if you, you know, so choose. But, it's all white people's discretion. They are in charge about what benefits you'll get and how much they'll be worth and all the rest of it. Like, they are in charge, even whether or not we accept those benefits, whether or not we cash your check, we will make those decisions. All of us. Very important that all of us remember that. Much obliged, Rob. Any other folks, comments, observations, get in before we conclude?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. I was thinking of two reports that also happened this week. The first is, I think it involves some unjust networking occurring. The older white woman and a white man, they were speaking about an ice machine. So she apparently doesn't like when the ice machine makes noise to create ice cubes to drop into the machine. So the white guy comes in, and he's about to get ice out of the machine. And she says, "Oh wait, try and get ice from the front of the machine, because it'll make noise if you scoop ice from the back." And he says, "Oh well, I always get ice from the front, you know." So she says, "Well, that's good or whatever, because if, because blank, meaning me, he might complain or something." And, you know, she was smiling while saying it, like she was joking or whatever. So he says, "Oh, the last thing I want to do is get blank upset. Now, any of you women, I'm fine with that. But blank, last thing I want to do is get him upset." So obviously they've been, you know, doing it. They've been in the chat and doing the emails again. So that's also how I think they've been getting the emails out. And the second one is for the Martin Luther King holiday. It looks like the clerk sent out another tacky meme. It says, "I hope everyone has a wonderful Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend." And it reads, it has a picture of Dr. King's face, and it reads, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." So I think I heard Mr. Fuller speak about that, quote, "drive out the darkness." So I read that a little bit today before I clocked out. So I just wanted to share those, and thanks for allowing me to speak.
Hey, Gus, could I add something to what the gentleman just said?
Yes, sir.
I think I really like what the gentleman said, because, like, it's what he said is like what Martin Luther King said. It's almost like you actually need light to dictate what happens to dark. But I think what's a good way of looking at it is light can't exist without darkness. So that's just another codified way of looking at it, because in the system of white supremacy, dark is always being labeled as something that's unpleasant. You need to get away from it. But a lot of the biggest phenomenons in the universe are black holes and dark matter. So I guess I just wanted to add that, you know, dark is one of the most powerful phenomenons on the planet. And it's the racists tend to use the word dark in a negative connotation. And that's actually all what I wanted to say. Thank you.
That generally is the case. Something black, people, things, ominous, vile. Can't overcome this racism thing with darkness. That sounds like some black identity extremist subcontext or something. Like, I don't know. I was hearing the MLK holiday, which is Monday, will be on the air. So for whatever that's worth, the MLK holiday, I was thinking of MLK in the OJ. I don't know if it's in. It's got to be in the OJ Simpson book. Frickin' Mark Furman is report, or it's not even alleged because he got in trouble for it. He wrote KKK on the Martin Luther King holiday on the calendar. So I guess whatever the Monday was in the year that he got in trouble, he wrote KKK on the day, and they were able to figure out that it was him, and he got reprimanded for that. Good old Mark Furman.
Wow.
I think it's got to be in the book. It's got to. We haven't got that. All of this is like way down the line. We haven't got to where he takes the stand at. So you have to pay. If you are not listening to the book club, O.J. Simpson, wow. We should all be quasi expert. He has so many. I told you I keep bringing up the workplace racism. A black female police officer accused Mark Furman of planting a gun on her. Like he said, excuse me, she said that, you know, the gun, it's supposed to be secured if you're a security officer, police officer, really anything. She said she came out. It was a shotgun just there. She's like, what in the world? And it scared her really bad. And she said, man, I think Mark tried to set me up, like, because you get in trouble, you get fired for that sort of thing. And she said that's what she thought he tried to do, to put this gun out unsecured so they could come and, hey, what are you doing here? You're trying to get, blah, 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 you could get killed and all the rest of it. We're going to write you up and that sort of thing. She thought that's what he did. So there are many accusations of Mark Furman, who is Washington State's finest, one of my neighbors I didn't even know. But that's in the book club. More to come. Good old Mark Furman. Tomorrow, compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Much obliged to all the folks who tuned in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best. I don't know if white people, well, they do normally get right. You just heard about Mark Furman, so they do normally get a little bit rowdy for the King holiday. Maybe that'll be muted because of the Rona and lots of things are kind of shut down. We got restrictions in California and all that, so maybe they'll have to hold in their rage about the holiday this time around, but at least be mindful of that. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's keep the brain computer working correctly, trying to solve problems, just being mindful of the problem we're trying to solve. In addition to being sober, hunker down. Lots of hazards, armed white people, armed victims, unfortunately. The Rona. They got the inauguration coming. It's probably going to be all kinds of military enforcement officials out in the D.C. area, DMV area, really. Lots of reasons to let's try to stay in if and where possible. If you got to go out, it's something constructive and essential. We are very aware of our surroundings, like head on a swivel. I am not just bobbing along, my earbuds in, got my noise-canceling headphones on, and I'm totally oblivious to the world. Like, those days are over. Like, very aware of what's happening. If it even looks like somebody is getting hostile, loud, we are out of there. Like, there's no confrontations, no verbal altercations and getting loud with some stranger in public. Like, we should be thinking this fella could have a firearm. In fact, this woman could have a bunch of other friends who also have firearms. Like, no, we are very risk avoidant, really, for the foreseeable future. Especially for any of these, like just going out in public, random skirmishes with a white person or even a non-white person. Like, nah, these too many of these have ended up in Mortal Kombat. And unless you left your residence with the intention of killing and or being killed, nah, not no way in the world should we be just coasting into those type of situations. If you are leaving, you are sober. Buckled driver or passenger. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone, just doing the small things to avoid contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. No name calling. One of the easy ones. 10 stops, according to Mr. Fuller. No name calling. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
no
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.